Today's Perek in Tanakh is a Perek Yud Alef in Sefer Shoftim. And so the last thing that we learned yesterday was that apparently the B'nai Amon had gathered together to try to take back the Chelek that had been inherited from Sichon V'og, in which was now inhabited by the B'nai Reuven and the B'nai Gad and the Chatzi Shevet Menashe. And they bedafka went to the area of Gilad, which was inhabited by the Chatzi Shevet Menashe, and they could not find anyone to lead an attack against Bnei Amon, and they were likely to lose their chilek. This now came at the end of the bakasha that they had to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save them, and they did teshuva, and they were meiser le'anechar, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu indeed was willing to give them a Yeshua. And that's where we're holding now. We're going to go back in time, in Perek Yud Aleph, to discover what the background was to the Yeshua that ends up being given to them as a result of the Teshuvah in Perek Yud. So moving back in time, there was a man called Yiftach, who was a member of the Gilad. So the Yiftach HaGiladi, Gilad apparently was a Adam Choshev from that Shevet, and they called the whole area now Gilad. And he was a Gibor Chayo. The problem was, he was a very, very fast and powerful man. The problem was, V'hu ben Isha Zona. V'yoled Gilad et Yiftach. The whole story of Benot Zlofchad resulted in a major division between Shiftei Yisrael. Because what happened was, since it wasn't Benot Zlofchad's fault, it was Menashe's fault. Because it was B'nai Machir ben Menashe that came to complain to Moshe Rabbeinu and to say that it's an intolerable situation where you have a person who is going to marry now somebody from out of Shevet. If this is a woman who inherited her Shevet, when she dies, the Nachla is going to go either to her husband from that other Shevet, or ultimately or immediately, depending what the case may be, to her son from another Shevet, and that way it's going to be permanently lost. HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered the suit by saying, indeed, a woman who comes from another Shevet who stands in line to inherit cannot marry out of Shevet. Now you understand that the implications of this were to tremendously encourage a sense of ethnic identity instead of a Yisrael identity. Because now it became crucial that every Shevet maintain its own separate areas and its own separate ways, and this was something that caused, as we're going to see in the following prokim, that caused a tremendous breakdown in Klal Yisrael that was taken by the B'nai Yisrael to extremes, and that we actually have a national holiday on the day when this was canceled, and that's Tu B'Av. So Tu B'Av, they realized that this had only been meant for that original generation of the Nichlasim La'aretz, and no way was HaKadosh Baruch Hu in favor of maintaining a federated nation in which each chelek would be something that has to be different, and rather it was something that was meant to be a transitional period, just as the truth is that this entire book is a transitional period to a period of a united nation that has Melech Echad Aleihem. And instead, as we pointed out at the beginning, this is a period in which each Shevet creates a Shofet and has its, whether strange or understandable, import on the, an impact on the rest of the nation. We took a look at that map, the opening map, and we saw that literally the Shvatim blanketed the entire country, each one of which painted the country in completely different colors. And we're talking about now the flamboyant colors of this section, which the Gemara identifies, starting with Gidon, not being, he was a Kal Eilam, after all, Superboy in Smallville is not really an expression of the entire nation, nor was Yiftach HaGiladi. So what had happened is that because of the Gezerah about the Benot Zlofchad, the Shvatim had gotten very makbid not to marry out of Shevet, Bichlal. And a woman from out of Shevet that married was viewed as the equivalent of a prostitute. Who would go and take a woman from out of Shevet? A Zaina. So that's how they looked at her. It was mad. So it got to the point where if a man had married a woman from outside of the Shevet, she would be, the children would be thrown out. We don't want you to inherit. Why not inherit? I understand. The din of Yerusha goes according to the father. Why shouldn't you inherit? No, because the father took the wrong woman, and this was a gezerah because of Yerusha, that we shouldn't ruin our Yerusha. You obviously talk about a bunch of amaratzim, in which the entire idea had become so warped, and they had turned it into this strange, this quasi-halachic representation of Yerusha v'Shevet, and it no longer bore any connection to the real halach. Okay, so this is what happened. Yiftach HaGiladi, he was the son of an Isha Zona. Why? Because his father Gilad had him as a son from this woman from another Shevet. Vayolet Gilad et Yiftach. Vatelet Eshet Gilad lo banim. Now his rightful wife, of course, is the wife that comes from the Shevet. She had sons who viewed themselves as the only rightful heirs. Vayigdalu v'nei ha'isha. So when they grew up, they threw Yiftach out of the house. Vayigarshu et Yiftach. Vayomru lo lo tinchal b'beit avinu. Ki ben isha acheret ata. You're from another kind of woman. Not the type that should be a consort to someone who is from Gilad.
Not just another woman.
We're going to see later that even the Beit Din of Gilad went along with this. The Ziknei Gilad went along with this. And this was the way that they were doing. And so, Vayivrach Yiftach mikliachav, Vayeshev be'eretz tov, Vayitlakatu el Yiftach anashim reikim, Vayetzu imo. Yiftach was forced to run away and live in the land of Tov. And he ended up now becoming basically a detached person. And around him, because of his undeniable capabilities, there gathered a group of people that were like him. Reikim, that had no particular familial identification, who for some reason or another had been thrown out by the family, and had nowhere to go but to someone who would lead them as a group of wandering men. So you have to realize that basically, at a time like this, where everything was very family and Shevet oriented, a person who didn't have a Shevet had no place to be. And this is the sense of rape. Anybody that we find later on by David HaMelech, also a similar idea in which people were left bereft because of the fact that they had gone bankrupt and had been thrown out, or they were wanted by the authorities. But whatever it was, there was nowhere to go. The only one who had anywhere to go were the Arei Miklat. And that was Bedafka for someone who was a Reitzeah. But someone who had fallen out of society because of something like this was literally a lost soul. So what would happen is that people like this were left as bands, gypsies. And either they would become robbers, highway robbers, or mercenaries. So this is what happened to Yiftach, which is why he probably went to Eretz Tov, because Eretz Tov, Lamaisa, was still, if we take a look at the map, was that part of the area that was still outside of the range of the Yerusha that had been taken. So it was to the north of the Yerusha that they were Zayichatu, to the north, northeast. And we know that the northeast section, it was never taken. We never hear a word about it. The reason it was never taken is because the Aram and the Taina, this is why they violated the Gilad, which is the Gal-Ev, is that they kept insisting that it's their territory and didn't allow the Yerusha of Eretz Yisrael in that entire area. So that means that the people that were there, we spoke about it a couple of days ago, there were tent dwellers, there were Bedouin, essentially. And this was the way that Yiftach, that earlier Gidon had gone, he went around the way in which there were the tent dwellers. This is Eretz Tov, assuming. And therefore, he also ended up in that area. Now, the Yerushalmi says, why is it called Eretz Tov? Very weird shot. It's called Eretz Tov because it wasn't Chayev in Maaser. So it was the area of Susita, says the Yerushalmi. Therefore, you called it good. And why do you call it good? There's a number of different pshatim. Lamaisa, one reason why we call it good is because the Medrash identifies the Vayihi Erev, Vayihi Voker. The Gemara has, is not a contradiction. You're saying Vayihi, it's Lashon Tzar. And then it says Vayar Elokim Vinei Tov. So is it Tov or is it Lashon Tzar? Answers the Medrash, it's not completely Tov, because since there are mitzvahs that are again each of these days that you could end up being nichshal in, so therefore it's not completely Tov. Even if somebody's Bechal Shabbos, so it'll be Vayihi. It'll be Chayiv Misa for Chol Shabbat. But since over here Susita was Potter from Maisris, so it was Kuloi Taif, because nobody could come to do an Isser of Maisr. That's how the Yerushalmi understands. But there's another beautiful pshat, which follows from the Rambam. The Rambam explains, the Pirusha Mishnah is the Lashon of Tevel. It says Tevel means Tov Lo. So that means an Eretz Tov has no Tevel. Tov Lo, it's still not good, because it's still Tevel. But something that's Potter from Meiser only has the Tov part of the Tov Lo. So it's therefore Eretz Tov. That's a fantastic remnant of where this area was. But the Yerushalmi says, Beferish, it's the area of Susita, which allows us to identify it on the map. So if you take a look at the non-colored map, you'll see that Susita, which is on the edge of the Kinneret, basically, going up towards the Golan Heights, overlooking the Kinneret, that's where the Yerushalmi identifies Eretz Tov, right? So it's the area of the Bashan, which is basically when you come down over Hamat Gader today, and you look to your left, there's an you're going down an insane cliff as you go down. I mean, it's absolutely wild. Driving down that thing is absolutely wild. So to the east, exactly. So if you look to your left, you're overlooking the Bashan. That you're right at the border of modern Syria, Jordan, Israel, where all three countries come together in that corner. And right there, you are overlooking the area that Aram made difficulties for. And a little bit lower, you're looking at the area that was being attacked now, also towards your left. So as you're driving down the Bikat HaYarden, you're facing the left. The entire way is the area of Gilad. And that is the area that now was under attack by B'nai Amon. Now let's again remember what had happened so that we could figure out why this is happening. The truth is that Amon and Moab, remember that they're initially brothers, right? Start off together. So we always refer to their land as a single unit. It's Amon and Moab. They, in fact, protected each other. And here, too, the B'nai Amon are coming and protesting what happened to Amon and Moab. Now, the Moab area was, as if you will recall, beneath Nahal Arnon. Nahal Arnon goes in about the middle of the Amamela. Eretz Amon used to be all the way up to the Yarden, just as Moab used to be all the way in this area. They'd split this Eretz of Gilad. What happened is that Sichon took over that area, so that when Sichon and Og were conquered, what happened is that that made a permanent dent in Amon and Moab. So this is one of those kinds of crazy things in which a country remembers for centuries, like modern-day Hungary, or Czechoslovakia, or the Germans, the Sudetenland. It's ours, it's ours, it's ours. So no matter how many different hands it's gone through, at one point where there's an opportunity to recapture lands that are viewed as the Vaterland, that now these are our ancestral lands, we're going to take advantage of the weakness of whoever is there, and we'll take it back. So now, remember that what has happened is that approximately 300 years have passed between the time of the conquering of these lands by Moshe from Sichon. So, I mean, and Sichon had been there way before. And now they're coming to Taina that it's really their land. The truth is, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had told Klal Yisrael, you have no rights to touch any land that belongs to Amon or to Moab. So we were always very careful not to attack them. The reason that Balak was so concerned is that he was worried that ultimately we would attack and that we would gradually subdue them. But Lamaisa, there was no reason to try to get B'nai Yisrael out of there because they had no intention of attacking Moab and no intention of attacking Moab. So how then did they inhabit this area? So as Chazal say, Amon u'Moab tiaro b'Sichon. Since HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Sichon to capture this territory, it no longer was called Amon u'Moab. And therefore B'nai Yisrael took it. Now, because of the weakness that we saw in the previous parak, in which gradually they got the sense that the Jews in this area could no longer protect themselves, and that was the truth. Because we saw the desperation at the end of last parak, the Ziknei Gilad were hoping that if they offer a high enough reward, someone will come forth and gather an army. Nobody came forth. So now, we look into the background and we discover, actually there was an Ish Gibor Chayil, but they had sent him away. So now they're really in a quandary, because the only one that had any keach to protect Gilad was the very one that they didn't even want to acknowledge should be a member of the Shevet, since his mother came from elsewhere. This is a tremendous mina k'neged mina. So here comes Dafka B'nai Menashe, Dafka B'nai Mocher Ben Menashe, the very ones who created this whole problem, and they find themselves 300 years later with a problem that they created because of the way in which they completely perverted the issue of Benot Slavchot. It's a remarkable story. So this became now a way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with the problem of ethnicity carried to extreme. Okay, so now we come back to the modern times. And now we're at, this is a new parsha. Vayhi miyamim. Okay, so this is a parsha now, separate parsha. It's marked as a separate parsha in the Sefer. And it starts here in Pasuk Dalet. Vayhi miyamim, and so, as the years passed, now came along what we said happened. Vayilachamu b'nei Amon im Yisrael. And as we already saw, the Ziknei Yisrael couldn't find anybody to protect Gilad. And now, going up another year, they were desperate. What a come down. Here, the very people that had sent him away needed to come and bade him to return and to save us. Vayomer liyiftach lecha, vayita lanu lekatzin, why don't you become the general over our army, v'nilchama b'vnei Amon, and we'll be able to fight off b'nei Amon. Vayomer yiftach, what is that? Excuse me? Halo atem sneitem oti. Wait a minute, you hate me, remember? Have we forgotten the history? You guys who are coming today with all of your fancy clothing, you're looking very choshev, you went along with this whole thing. Vatigarshunim beit avi. You say, I don't belong in Gilad. And now I am shocked. All of a sudden, umadu avatem elai atak asher tzar lachem. So now when things are tough, all of a sudden, here you are. Now, isn't that interesting? Why exactly should I go with you? Vayomer zikne Gilad al yiftach. Well, we're trying to be nice. I mean, look, we've realized our error. L'chein atah shavnu elecha. We've come back to you, right? And we want you to be part of us now. And I'll tell you what. Not only will you be a katzin. I see that's not enough. All right, so you know what? If you come back, ve'alach imano v'nilchamta b'vnei Amon, we will appoint you, oh God, the head of all of Gilad. Oy, oy, oy. So vayita lanu l'rosh l'chol yoshvei Gilad.
From his perspective?
Oy, from them. This is what he reduced them to. Okay. Vayomer yiftach al ziknei Gilad. Let me get this straight now. I want to hear this clearly from your mouth. Im meshivim atem oti lilachem b'vnei Amon, v'natan adonai otam lefanai, anochi yeh lachem l'rosh. I want to make very sure I understand this. I go, set up the army, defeat b'nei Amon, and I become chief of Gilad. Is that correct? Vayomer ziknei Gilad al yiftach. It's not only correct, we swear it. Adonai yesh omea benotenu im lo kidvarcha kenaseh. God is our witness. Now, of course, this is Gal-Ed, which is exactly what Ilovan and Yaakov had said in Gal-Ed, right? This is exactly the place where you make these kind of commitments. So, exactly, don't cross me. It's exactly the words they use. La'avor alai l'ra'am. So don't cross me. Yes, same geographical place. That's what I call Gilad is the Gal-Ed, basically. Vayelech yiftach im ziknei Gilad, and so he went with them. Vayasimu ha'am oto alayem l'rosh ulekatzin. They made him both. He was the head, the political head, and he became the head of the army. Vayedaber yiftach et kol dvarav lifnei Adonai b'mitzpah. Now, this is an amazing thing. What this teaches us is the power of the neder that is made over here b'shem Hashem. So that, as Rashi says elsewhere, when someone repeats over a t'nai with a neder, it's by definition lifnei Hashem. So because since they said Hashem is benotenu, then that meant, just like it did by Lavan and by Yaakov, they both invoked the name of their gods, Kaviyachol, you know, Elohei Avraham, Elohei Nachor, or Pachad Yitzchak. This became the Gal-Ed, Eid HaGal-Hazeh, which means that the mitzvah, of course, this is the mitzvah of Gal-Ed, as you see on your map, nothing to do with mitzvah that has showed up in other places. But a mitzvah simply means a high cliff that looks out. And this became a mitzvah in which the presence of Hashem was there, and therefore, because of the neder, it was Lifnei Hashem. That means that Yiftach spoke out the neder. And he said, this has to be binding, and this is what I want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be an aid. Vayishlach Yiftach malachim ha-melech b'nei Amon lemor. It appears that Yiftach was very taken by the nature of words, communication. This is the first time that we find an attempt to negotiate in good faith and with an historical awareness of what is happening. This is a remarkable, remarkable document. Yiftach sends messengers to the king of Bnei Amon, and he says to him, excuse me, but ma livalach ibatei lai lilachim ba'arzi. I mean, we've been at peace. All of a sudden, now you're warring against us. For what possible reason? International law does not allow attacks. What are you doing here? We have nothing against each other. Vayomer melech b'nei Amon malachei Yiftach. Nothing against each other. Sure, nothing but the fact that you have taken our ancestral lands that have always been Ammonian territory. So that we've just simply come to take it back. We have nothing against you. Kilakach Yisrael at Artsi, ba'alotomi Mitzrayim. All the land from the Arnon until the Yabok. So the Arnon, remember, was the river that was to the south in the middle of the Amamela. From the Arnon all the way up to the Yabok in the north. That's where the generator is, the first electrical generator, as you're going up at the corner of the Yarden, beneath, south of the Yamakinaret. All of that territory was stolen from us. You guys don't belong here. you're right, we have no reason to war against you. Just give it back peacefully and we can be friends. Nobody's asking to fight. V'ata hashiva eten v'shalom. Just give it back in peace, absolutely. Negotiations with no preconditions other than you give everything back. Vayosef od Yiftach. And so Yiftach continued the verbal negotiation. Vayishlach malachim ha-melach b'nei Amon. Vayomelo. Ko amar Yiftach. Wrong. Lo lakach Yisrael et eretz Moab et eretz b'nei Amon. Israel never touched anything that belonged to you guys, and this is a complete perversion of history, and we are not going to go along with it. Now, may I remind you that kivalotam mimitzrayim vayelach Yisrael bamidbar ad yamsuf vayavo kadesha. Please let us remember how all of this started. I'm sure you guys have perfectly clear historical records. We know exactly what happened. They got up to Kadesh, and then vayishlach Yisrael malachim el melech Edom. Look, the truth is we never even wanted to war. We were attacked. We were simply defending ourselves. And now, because we fight a war of defense, all of a sudden we're supposed to be the ones that are giving you territory that you never owned. Boy, I love it. Of course, this becomes the historical pattern for exactly what everybody expects Yisrael to do. But what actually had happened, says Yiftach, is that we sent messengers to the king of Edom. We never wanted anybody's territory, gentlemen. So when we went to Edom, all we asked for was rites of passage for which we would pay anything that we took. Ebrana be'artzecha. No, he couldn't listen. V'lo shama melech Edom. So, did we invade? No. We circled around. We sent to your great-great-grandparents, the Melech of Moab, and we asked them the same thing. Now, it doesn't say that in the Torah, but as the Medrash puts it, and Rashi brings, we're now being mashlim, the story that is clear happened then, and it wasn't important enough to discuss. Apparently, they also did it to Greece. So, Gama Melech Moab, Shalach, V'lo Abba, he refused to let us pass. So, there we were in Kadesh, and we went all the way around the entire Eretz Edom through the eastern desert. This was not easy, guys. We didn't touch any of your territory. We left your whole peace where you are now. To the east, we left it alone. Never bothered you. Went all the way to the east. Circled around. We went all the way around to the east. Circled around Eretz Moab. Came back at the other side of the Arnon. Velo bo bigvul Moab. Let's get this straight. Is Moab the country to the south of the Arnon? Last I heard, yes. 100 years ago, yes. 200 years ago, yes. 300 years ago, yes. What is your problem? Arnon is the gvul of Moab. And then, we didn't even want to conquer your previous lands. We sent messengers to Sichon, Melech Emori. Please remember, he was the king of Emori, who was the king of Cheshbon, that you are claiming is your capital. No, no, no. That's part of the Emori. Vayomelo Yisrael, we even asked him nicely. Nabrana ve'artzachad mekomi, all we want to do is pass through to the other side of the Yarden. But of course, no, we can't let them pass through. V'lo ha'min Sichon et Yisrael avor bigvulo. And instead, he gathers an army, vayasov Sichon et kolamo, vayachanu beyatza, vayilachem im Yisrael. So what does he do? Gathers an army, goes out above Nachal Arnon to the town of Yatza. Here's Nachal Arnon in your map. There's the town of Yatza, and there he is. So we had no choice. We had to fight him. Vayitena Adonai Elohei Yisrael Sichon vet kolamo beyad Yisrael, vayakum. And we won. How do you like that? Because Hashem gave us that territory. Vayirash Yisrael kol eretz Emori yosheva aretz ahi. And so we had nothing to do with you, mind you. I keep repeating this. This was the land of the Emori. We conquered the Emori. Vayishut kol gvul ha Emori, the Emori that lived undeniably, according to your own records, from Arnon. Va'ad hayabok, and that is from the south to the north. Umin hamidbar to the east. Va'ad hayarden to the west. Now, do we have our geography clear, says Yiftach? Do we have our history clear? Thank you. So now let us review the situation. Ve'ata. Adonai Elohei Yisrael, horish et ha'amori mipnei amo Yisrael. So God did not give us any of your territory. He gave us the territory of the Amori. And now I'm trying to understand. Ve'ata tirashena? Now you're going to take it. That's rich. You're going to take it. Halo et asher yorishcha kmo sheloecha. Oto tirash. Now these guys were into the tribal gods, you know. So as far as they were concerned, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the tribal god of the Jews, you know. So he says to them in a way that they can understand. You know, your god Kmosh, he gave you these territories. That's what you got. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, that's what we got. Now, let's just think this over. The king of Moab at the time that all of this happened had nothing to say about it. We did not find him, who was very powerful, a lot more powerful than you clowns. He didn't go out to war against us when we took over Sichon, claiming, well, that's really Moab territory. Never said a word about it. Harov Rav in Israel, did he argue about it? Im Nilchon Nilcham Bam? Did he go out now to fight? You know what? We've been living here for 3 centuries. So B'Shevet Yisrael B'Cheshbon B'Venotea, you're claiming Cheshbon is your area. We've been living in Cheshbon and in all the surrounding cities. We've been living in Aror. Now, Aror is the area right across to the west from Rabat B'nai Amon. That was the capital of Amon, not to be confused with the other Aror, which is Al-Sfat Nachal Arnon at the bottom of your map. This is the Aror, which is right across the Gvul of Amon, not the Aror that's across the Gvul of Moab on the other side of the river Arnon. Okay? So we lived in all of those areas and in all of the suburbs. Ubechol ha'arim asher al yedei Arnon shlosh me'ot shana. We've been here for 300 years. Now, can you explain madua lo itzaltem be'et ahi? How come nobody thought about this before? Man, oh man, does this sound familiar, doesn't it? Suddenly, history is rewritten in a day. We've never been here. This was old Palestinian, Armonian land. And the Jews have just arrived, and blah, blah, blah. Right? Same classic story. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so here we've got all of these years. We've got the 28 years of Yoshua. This started before Yoshua, because Moshe Rabbeinu was Moresh, right? And then we've got those 40 years, and then the next 80 years, and then 40 years again, 22 years, and 23 years, and then 18, the 3 years of Avimelech. And now we've got these 18 years of the Shibud. Buddy, you're over 300 years. And even if you want to go according to Seder Olam, by the time Yiftach really is into his second year, it's 300 years. So either it's a lot more, or it's 300 years. So this now provides us, by the way, a clue. Because we're assuming that Yiftach wouldn't have opened himself up to a taina of Bnei Amon. 300 years? What are you talking about? It was only 299 years, which is, of course, what you would expect them to say. So if he said 300 years, he must have meant exactly 300 years. Therefore, the Gra builds his analysis of the years, that this is a given thing. If you know, at this point in Yiftach, it must have been 300 years from the Yerusha, from Sichon. That allows us to understand what periods were involved in two separate times. So, as the Seder Olam said, sometimes the number of years of the problem are included in the number of years of Shalom, or perhaps we're looking at times in which, in some of the country, it was Sheket, and in other parts of the country, it wasn't Sheket, but those two things could have been concomitant. So we have over here at least our first historical marker. That's why I mentioned Rabbi Yaakov, we'll discuss this later. Here we know that 300 years have passed since that time. Okay, so why didn't anybody say anything to him? So let's just get the moral high ground over here straight. We have done nothing for you to invade us. The ata, Hosei Tira'a, you are the one who is violating international law, Lila Chaimbi, with Goldstone or without him. It's very clear that this is the reality. And now that we're talking reality, the hell with Kamosh. Ki yishpot Adonai ha-shofet ayom, ben b'nei Yisrael v'ben b'nei Amon. Because if you're talking about the shofet kol ha'aretz, it sure ain't Kamosh. And if you are trying to attack b'nei Yisrael, the Am of Hashem, then you're talking about serious problems. V'lo shama melech b'nei Amon el divrei Yiftach asher shalach elav. He wouldn't listen. And at that moment, when they rejected the peace efforts of Yiftach, Vatiya Yiftach Ruach Adonai, Yiftach was filled with this tremendous spirit of Gevura. He now comes from his Eretz Tov, probably. Could probably have gone back from Mitzvah to gather his army. Goes to the entire Gilad, gathers together Menashe, crosses Mitzvah Gilad. From Mitzvah Gilad, he comes directly to Bnei Amon, who by this time have apparently withdrawn into Bnei Amon, as they understand they're about to be attacked. He attacks them in Bnei Amon, not in Gilad. Vayidar Yiftach neder ladunai vayomar. And so he swears. Im naton titen et Bnei Amon biyadi. If you give Bnei Amon into my hand, v'aya yotzei asher yetzei midaltei beiti likrati. V'shuvi v'shalom im Bnei Amon, v'aya ladunai v'alitihu ola. So if I'm zoche to this, I promise that whatever leaves the door of my home first, as I come back in victory, that will be given to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and be brought up as a Korban Olam. Big mistake. Now, this is, remember, the guy who lives his life by words. Right? In other words, he views the statement that was made. He says, I want to review this statement. I want you to say it. We say it. I will now go to the mitzvah and I will re-say it in front of Hashem. So now it becomes infinitely binding. He's now on his way. There's nothing you can do. You open your mouth, nothing you can do. In fact, we'll see that his name, Yiftach, is built around his unwillingness to recognize the meaning of a neder and a shvua. He refuses to seek a petach. Instead, to him, the petach is petach beito, which screws up his entire life. The first thing that comes out of the petach, it's a play on words. He is Yiftach, and he makes a neder about a petach, which is an insane neder, because as HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, now wait a minute, what if a pig comes out of your house? You're telling me you're going to bring now an animal that's tamei up to the mizbeach? What kind of stupid statement is that? Now, the truth is that there was a diak. Oh, so that's the machlokes in the Gemara. Was he bechalal chayiv to bring anything? Was this a chiyav of mumming? Because when somebody makes a neder and it's a dover that's not royal in his mizbeach, so it becomes a neder of domim to the mizbeach, you have to now pay the value of that thing to the mizbeach. Fine. Was he chayiv? Or was he bechalal not chayiv? Because since he said he was going to bring another as a korban, so the neder bechalal wasn't even chal. But certainly, it's not even nice to make a neder like this. Because you're saying, I'm going to bring something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that isn't roi to bring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to define. Now, the Gemara points out there are other people that made the dorim that weren't right, but it wasn't insulting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, look, Shaul HaMelech promised that the guy that kills the Goliath is going to get his daughter. What if the guy is a mamzer? Okay, that's you're stupid. But at least you're not talking to me. Oleg said, whoever goes up, Vilikot Kiryat Sefer, I'm going to give him Achsa. Would it be some jerk? Baruch Hashem. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave a Oleg, Otniel, tremendous tzaddik. And Kadosh Baruch Hu gives Shaul, David, beautiful. But you want to insult me already? And open up your mouth like a fool? I'm not going to save you. And so, in the end, this becomes now a disaster. But we don't know that yet. So Yiftach goes out to Bnei Amon Lachem Bam, and indeed, Vayitnei Adonai Biyado. And so, Vayakem Mi Aroer, V'ad Boacham Minit, Esrim Ir, V'ad Avel Kramim, Makah Gedolah Ma'od, Vayikanu Bnei Amon Mipnei Bnei Yisrael. So there are really two very different shitot as to where we're referring to Avel Kramim. Probably the most logical is that Minit is right at the border of Eretz Bnei Amon, across the upper Yabok, you see in your map, all the way on the right side of the map. And Avel Kramim is all the way at the main part of the Yabok, where the southern extension of the Yabok joins up the Yabok. That entire area became now a real border that Amon could no longer cross. 20 cities in that area, he takes over. Bnei Amon are ruined. They're never going to try this shtick again. And they were nichnas. They surrendered, unconditional surrender. Mipnei Bnei Yisrael. Obviously, he didn't take anything from Amon. He took the area that we're not allowed to take from Amon. But he took any of the areas that Amon was disputing. That was really part of the Eretz Sichon. This he keeps. So he comes back to Mitzvah. Now his home is in the Mitzvah, where we're supposed to be. El Beito, v'nei bito yotzeit likrato b'tupim u'b'mecholot. His daughter comes to greet him, singing, which is the derech of Bnei Yisrael always. That's the, like Miriam, tupim u'mecholot. There's a victory, there's going to be Shira. The women are responsible for Shira. So she comes out like Dvorah to be shar. V'raki yechida, she is his only descendant. In lo mimenu bein obat, he had no other child. This is all that he had. Vayikir oto ta, when he sees her, he's broken, destroyed. Vayikra et begadav, he tears his clothes. Vayomer ahabiti, achrei yikra tani, I may have been victorious over my enemies. You have defeated me. Va'ata yit ba'ochrai, now you have frozen my blood, basically. I opened my mouth. To HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what am I supposed to do now? So she says to Mavi, I would never, chas v'sholom, suggest to you to be over on a neder. You said it, you have to do. But one thing I will ask you. Harpei many shleim chodashim. Give me 2 months. How do you go down on the mountain? You go up on the mountain. So Chazal say this means the harim is a reference to Sanhedrin. That's Elas to be Esa El Harim is the harim because we'll find the petach. We'll go to Sanhedrin. Find him. I would never tell you not to do your neder. You hold it to Neder, so we'll find the Petach for the Neder. Turns out, says the Medrash HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who wanted to teach him a lesson. There's no Neder, no Petach. They can't find the Petach. The Gemara points out, Pinchas was there. Pinchas is a Yochid Mumcha. He could have found the Petach to the Neder. But Pinchas says, I'm going to go to this idiot. This guy's an Amoritz. Pinchas should go to an Amoritz. Says Yiftah, but I have a din of a Melech. They made me the Rosh. I should go to a Kohen. Let him come to me. Neither of them, therefore, gave a Petach. The result was horrific for both of them. Because Yiftach ended up, as we're going to see in the next parak, becoming a Mitzera, and literally lost his limbs while he was living. So that he was buried in pieces across his lifetime. And Pinchas is referred to later on in Divrei HaYamim as the man that used to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu with him, Haya Imo. So Pinchas lost his Kayach of Nevi'is, a disaster. And this is what the Navi refers to. Atzari ain't Begilad. Harofei ain't Shom. What do I understand? There's no answer to this problem. It's idiotic. It's a bunch of primitives. Primitives. What is this nonsense? Dvorim asher lo ala libi. So Chazal take it to mean literally. He was mockery. Killed her. Lamaisa, all of the Mefarshim disagree with that. All of the Mefarshim take the approach, and we'll see why, take the approach that he did not bring her as a korban. But the bottom line is that this was an expression of something which is in and of itself borders on the ultimate chet. And that is the unwillingness to seek a petach. You'll notice that on Yom HaKippurim, which is the tikkun for the Maisa Egel, first thing we do is heter nadar. First thing we do. Why? Because the shoresh of all sin is speech. It's the way in which you perceive reality. Language forms the way you perceive reality. The only way, in the same way when a person makes a neder, he's by definition a chayte. Tov nizam, he said, no tidor kolika. Who asked you to make a neder? Or like we find a nazir as a chayte. What do you mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu defines reality. What is your definition of reality? No, memel it could be for a particular need to be mechazik yourself. You could make a neder. But only, and you'll notice, take a look at the parshas of the Dorim. How is it introduced? Hashem speaks to the matot. Exactly the words used here. The ethnic ones. Not to the Shvati. Roshei Matot. And what is that speech? Heter Nedarim. Now we'll talk about Nedarim. A father can be Nematir, the Neder of a daughter. Father, daughter. That's what this is all about. Exactly. A Neder is not meant to be taken seriously. It's presented not as the Chiev of keeping it, but as the way to get out of it. That's the way the Torah mentions Neder. If you don't get out of it, you keep a Neder. For a man who should have been searching for a Petah to take his word, as the Lord has spoken, represents a primitivism that goes back to the root of Ra in Gan Eden, which is the Sherish of Das, the way I want to look at the world, which is what allows me to do all Chatoyim. I figure a way of looking at reality. There's nothing so terrible about doing this. Once a person is locked into his own vision of reality, the sky's the limit. Therefore, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to open your fat mouth. And it's all about how you were treated and how they promise you that they're going to treat you. And how you promise me that you're going to treat me. And all of this is real, right? We'll see how real it is. So Mamela, this becomes now, as each parak in Shoftim has been, a breakthrough in which a certain level of primitivism is removed, in which we come to understand that things need to be different. It's the end of this book that a totally different vision of an Am emerges, because we've gone through the craziest things, the craziest misapprehensions, all types of warpages that need to work themselves out, in which each one of the Shvatim were the leaders, but the Shoftim actually expresses some mishigas. And that mishigas now becomes something that needs to be worked through, and we go on to the next level. So no matter what level the tikkun is, it always leaves some crazy thing that still needs to be addressed. And only at the end of the period, which is the end of the Sefer HaYashar, in which everybody does whatever the heck they think, HaYashar, Bilibo Yaseh, this is Yiftach to the T. This is what I think is right. Only then do we emerge into a nation of Malchut. And it really is an amazing thing, because Kolal Yisrael today is so much more sophisticated than this. We look back and we see these people as Amayorats. What kind of nonsense is this? You're a Shefet. You're not fully aware of the implications. You don't understand how exaggerated this is. You don't see where you're going wrong. You don't understand the smallness of mind that would allow them. Obviously, we do the same things, but we have the benefit of all of these lessons so that once it's pointed out and the situation once again becomes critical, everything clicks into place. And now you emerge out of that with a different level of identity. And so she goes to find a petah. And what is it that happens? Ve'efkeh al betulai, anochi v'reotai. I will cry over my virginity. Now, it's a little bit strange to cry over one's virginity when one is about to be killed and shechted. Right? And so because of that, and because of other remuzim that we'll see, the Mefarshim almost all take a look at the neder, and they say, look at the neder. The neder is v'haya l'Hashem v'halitiu olam. Either it's v'haya l'Hashem or it's v'halitiu olam. I mean, what are the two things? So therefore, the understanding that they have is that he made two tnoyim. If it's something that is given to Hashem that's not roy to be a korban, it should belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If it's roy as a korban, it should be a korban ayil. Very reasonable. Except for the fact that there are things you can't give to Hashem. And this is exactly what his daughter says to him, according to the Medrash. Chana is going to give her son Shmuel to Hashem. What did that mean? It meant that he became a Talmud of Eli and he was Mishamish. Did it mean that he was somehow different than everybody else? Yaakov Avinu says, V'chol asher titein li aser asrenu lo. So what did that mean? That Shevet Levi was brought up as a korban? That Shevet Levi wasn't given a life? So, well, what kind of craziness is this? So they understand that the meaning is that he made her into a nun. And that's why she's crying over her virginity. He put her aside to belong to the Lord, married to Jesus. So this becomes a marker of that idea. So she says, if you can't find a petah, so it means that I am never going to lose my virginity. That's what I'm crying about, that I should be someone that leads a sterile life, that's unable to participate in the building of Yisrael. Vayomer lechi, so he said to her, go. Vayishlachu tashnei chadashim, vatelechi v'reoteha vatef al betuleha, not al betuloteha, meaning on the other girls that were her friends. Al ha'arim. And so at the end of the 2 months, she comes back to her father. So here, Pasuk Bedavka leaves it vague. We don't know what the netter is, because the truth is, it doesn't matter. You sit here in horror and you say, you mean he shechted her? Says the Pasuk, that's the issue. That's a minor issue. It's exactly the same. He made her a nun. He shechted her. The primitive element is precisely the same. It doesn't matter how awfully you sense it in your heart. What's wrong here is a guy who should be yiftach and refuses to be poteach. That's what's wrong. And that leads to things a lot worse than the murder of a girl, ultimately. That leads to the murder of millions and hundreds of millions. These little belief systems. And therefore, and here look how the Pasuk stresses it. V'yi lo yada'a ish. That's what we're talking about? I die having never slept with a man. Oh my! I mean, it sounds like it belongs to Gilbert and Sullivan. Unless that is indeed the Bechia, that I lose my ability to participate in the building of Yisrael. And indeed, all of my energies, all of my vitality, all of my femininity is lost to the world. Here, the fact of Yerusha being through the female is tremendously stressed here. This is what a woman is for? To be a nun? Or a woman is for reproduction, for relationship, for the Yerusha's Oretz itself? And so, miyamim yamima. This became now a minhag every year. Telachna benot Yisrael letanot lebat yiftach hageladi. To cry over what happened to bat yiftach. Arba'a yamim bashana. 4 days every year. My father Zatzal told me that he has a Kabbalah, that these 4 days are connected, the 4 ta'aniyot of the Korban. So this is the Asar B'Teves that we're about to have, and this is Shivasa B'Tamuz, and this is Tisha B'Av, and this is the Korban of Tzom Gedalia, because Lamaisa, the way in which instead of protecting a woman, and the Torah of a Neder, which is supposed to be Benurea Beit Avia, note how it stresses the Neurim, the Betulim, the whole relationship to sex, to what it is that I am, to my youthfulness. And this is what she's crying over. That violation by men of the nature of womanhood became the source of the loss of Eretz Yisrael. So that in the end, it was Bat Yiftach who starts the decline into Churban, and this becomes now the cry 4 times a year that we still preserve in our Ta'aniyot and Lamaisa. If you look at it more deeply, the Tikkun is the dancing of the girls on Tu B'Av, where they were Mevatov. All of this nonsense of the Shvatim being separate entities, being unable to marry each other, and so on, including all the stories of Tu B'Av revolve around this issue, whether it's in terms of Binyamin or is here. And that Bittul became the time of the dancing of the girls, which becomes the time of Yom Kippur, which becomes the time of Heter Nedarim. Amazing. So the entire thing is linked to one vision of Yerusha's Arts that started at the beginning of Yoshua, where we spoke about the nature of Yerusha's Arts in terms of the Mar Samach Pela, coming from Sora Imenu, being Rochel Imenu, and then even Rochav Azena, here now coming down to the breakup of another so-called Isha Zona, who is not really a Zona, and ends with a violation of the nature of Neder, which is the essential relationship of a man to a woman, either Benurea Beit Aviyah, or the husband protecting a wife. Amazing story.